possible.
Good morning. Welcome back to Saturday Miss. I'm your host, Yada. We're on the phone with Paul, who is calling in from Ontario. And Paul's last question was, how is it possible that that so many people have been deceived by Paul, and how I alone seem to be able to see through the fog of Paul. Let me begin by telling you that there's nothing. I'm not special in any way. I don't have any credentials that would impress anyone. I was once deceived by Paul. I was once an evangelical Christian. I taught evangelism. I was an ordained ruling elder in the Christian church. So I was once up to my eyeballs in Pauline doctrine, and it wasn't until a good friend of mine, his name is David, in New Zealand, wrote me a letter and said, you know, there's Christians are using the third chapter of Galatians to say that the Torah has been abrogated, that the Torah no longer has any merit, that the Torah is a curse, that the Torah enslaves, that the Torah cannot save. Can you do a study, systematic study of Paul's letter to the Galatians and find out, is that what the man actually wrote, or are Christians misinterpreting what he said? And Paul, what I did is I dedicated a full year of my life, 6 days a week, 10 hours a day, to reading the oldest extant manuscript of Paul's letters to the Galatians. And I compared what Paul said to what God had said. And that book became Questioning Paul. It's a book that I'm writing, just interestingly, I'm right in the middle of rewriting because I've learned so much since the time I originally wrote the book. And what I found is that it is impossible to be honest and to accept Paul. Now, I told you that I would answer the question for you as to how few people know the truth, have actually availed themselves of the covenant, its terms and conditions as they are presented in the Torah. And I told you that God answered that question. It's not an answer that people are comfortable with, but both Yahweh and Yahusha answered the question. Yahweh specifically, Yahusha less specifically. This is what God said. Now, this is something he etched in stone. It happens to be at the end of the second of three statements that Yahweh wrote on the first of two tablets. He said, but I will genuinely act, and I will actually engage to literally prepare, perform, and produce unmerited and unfailing mercy, unearned favor and undeserved kindness on behalf of thousands who move toward me and who love me and also who approach me by closely observing and carefully considering the terms and conditions of my covenant. That is from Shemoth. These are the names. Exodus 26. So God answered the question. He said thousands. You know what percentage a thousand is amongst billions? And there are 7 billion people on Earth today. If what percentage is thousands amongst billions?
Very small.
One in a million. One in a million. You would have to assume by this statement that the number of people who know what we're talking about right now is right around 7,000, since there's 7 billion people on the planet today. I know many, many hundreds, if not 1,000 or so, that know what I'm sharing with you. And it's not hard to know. It's actually extraordinarily easy to know. But here's the problem. And this answers the second part of your question. Then we'll turn to what Yahusha said on the same issue in terms of quantity. Is that when I was religious, I acted like every religious person who writes me. And I've received tens of thousands of letters over the last 10 years from religious individuals. And they're all the same. They're just thought like I was. Religious individuals are almost universally allergic to evidence and reason. Even God's own testimony is rejected by those who are religious because God's own testimony is opposed to their religion. And religion opposes evidence and reason. when it is adverse to the faith. And so most religious people, even with an emphatic statement like the one that I just read to you from Habacuc, I mean, that's a slam. There is no arguing with that. It means that Paul's letters are a plague of death and that you ought to reject them. There is no question that that's what God said. And yet, if I were to share that with a religious individual, rather than saying, wow, which was your response, they would reject it. They would call God's own words trash. Now, here's what Yahusha said on the same topic. He said, this then actually and presently is the Torah and the prophets. Under the auspices of free will, you should choose at some point in time to enter, personally engaging by moving through the narrow, the specific, the seldom tread, and exacting door. Because broad, man-made and crafted. You heard the word broad, right? In Yahusha's testimony, Yahweh's testimony. Because broad, man-made and crafted to be open is the door, and spacious is the way which misleads and separates unto utter death and destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And a great many are those who are influenced into moving while suffering the consequences of entering through it. Certainly, the specific doorway has strict requirements. It is narrow. It is seldom tread. And it is an exacting passageway. And it completely goes against the crowd to the point of persecution. The one way which leads, separating those guided unto life. But there are very few finding it. So God indirectly said, yeah, there's a broad popular way. And it leads to death. That means that it is impossible for the world's most popular religion, 2.5 billion strong, Christianity, based on Paul's letters, it is impossible for it to be the way to life when God said, no, the popular way leads to death. And it's only a very restrictive, unpopular, seldom tread way that leads to life. How many people do you know that observe Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavuah as the means, as the doorway, as the path to salvation?
Yeah, not too many.
Not too many. It is a narrow and it is a restrictive way. And so right after that, this is what Yahusha said, and it is so telling. He said, at the present time, you should all be especially alert, being on your guard, by closely examining and carefully considering thereby, and turning away from false prophets. Now, God did not, this is the Sermon on the Mount. I mean, this is God's first public declaration. It's his most comprehensive instruction. It is the largest crowd he ever spoke to. And right here in the middle of it, he says, at the present time, you should be especially alert, be on your guard, by closely examining and carefully considering, thereby turning away from false prophets, who come to you, appearing before you from within, by dressing up in sheep's clothing. Yet they are actually exceptionally self-promoting, self-serving, and swindling wolves. Not anyone saying, well, before I go to that next statement, let me just kind of put this in context. Yahusha is saying right there at that very moment where Paul was in rabbinical school in Jerusalem, and therefore in their midst, he was a Jew among Jews, that right there at that moment, there was a wolf in sheep's clothing that was going to lead them astray. He was affirming with what Yahweh had said in Habacuc, and Paul was indeed there. And he told them how the consequence of doing that, I mean, and even, you know, Paul twice says that he is a member of the tribe of Benjamin. You know what Yahweh says about the tribe of Benjamin? Says he's a vicious wolf.
Mm-hmm. Let me just mention one thing about Peter, Apostle Peter, in uh-huh. second chapter, calls him a brother, eh? He calls him a brother Paul.
The book of Second Peter is a marvelous presentation of Paul's letters. And in that second chapter of Shimon, which means he listens, he refers to him as a brother only in the sense that they're both Hebrew, they're both Jewish, they're both Yehudim. Then what he does is he actually says, the letters that Paul wrote, and he speaks specifically of the letter to the Galatians, he said it is deceptive. It uses circular reasoning. It is extraordinarily beguiling. He says, like all of Paul's letters, are exceptionally beguiling, and you ought not listen to him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's why Calvin, who's a very evil man, but Calvin wanted to reject a second Peter from the canon because it spoke so harshly of Paul's letters. Now, this is interesting. Here's the consequence of being victimized by Paul. Yosha says in the very next statement, this is the 16th verse of 7 Matanyah, which means Yah's gift, Matthew. He says, not anyone, not a single person saying to me, Lord, Lord, will actually, as a result, enter into the kingdom of the heavens. Not one calling him Lord. Why? God hates the title Lord. You familiar with the Hebrew title Baal?
Baal, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what Baal means?
No.
It means Lord. The title Baal is... You're familiar that Yahweh uses the title Lord, Baal, to describe Hasatan, the adversary? In fact, he uses it hundreds of times to identify Hasatan, the adversary, with the title the Lord. Do you know why God chooses to use the title the Lord when referring to Satan?
Go ahead.
Okay. The reason that God uses the title Baal to describe Satan is because Satan as the adversary is the antithesis of Yahweh. Satan wanted to lord over God. He wanted to lord over men. He wanted to be worshipped as a lord. He wanted men bowing down to him as a lord. He wanted to control men and women as a lord. That's why the title Lord is applied to Satan. God wants exactly the opposite. God's entire intent in creating us and his Torah and his covenant was to be our father. Father and Lord are mutually exclusive concepts. God is the antithesis of a Lord. And and we'll return to Yosha's statement after the break. But what God is saying is that if you choose to call me Lord, if you are that confused as to who I am, you're not coming into my home. We'll be back after the commercial break. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We're having a conversation with Paul, who is calling in from Ontario. And we're now considering Yosha's Sermon on the Mount. In this particular statement to Paul, Yosha was making a contrast that is probably the most important contrast we can possibly make. If we worship God, if we view God as a Lord, then we do not know him. Because God's whole concept is he got down on his knees to lift us up. He paid the price to make it possible for us to be his children. All he wants is to be our father and to be the father of the covenant children. And Lord and father are the antithesis of one another. So Yosha is saying here, you know, if you've been so confused by Paul that you're going to refer to me by the adversary's title, then you don't know me. And if you don't know me, you're not coming into my home. So he says, not anyone, not a single person saying to me, Lord, Lord, will actually, as a result, enter into the kingdom of the heavens. Now, as is the style of both Yahweh and Yosha, because they speak with one voice, God not only tells us the consequence of doing stuff that's counterproductive, he also tells us how we go about availing ourselves, capitalizing on what he's offering. So what does he conclude this with? He says, but by contrast, the one presently acting upon the purpose and the desire of my Father, the one who is in the heavens. So he is now contrasting the Father with Lord. They're opposites. No father can be a Lord. No lord can be cast in the role of loving father. You worship lords. You enjoy a family relationship with a father. The father serves his children. The subjects serve the Lord. They're opposite concepts. Now, how would one go about, if you wanted to know the will, the desire, the purpose, the mindset, the design, the resolve, the intent of the father, where would you go to find that?
Of his word.
Yes. And his word begins with a book we know as the Torah, right?
Yes.
In fact, the summation, the totality of Yahweh's word, where he speaks to us in first person, is the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Would that not be true?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the place you would have to turn to find his will. And his will is for us to embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant so that he, as our father, can lavish the benefits of the covenant upon us. So it's, you know, the answer to your question is, how do I know, and so few people know, is that somewhere along the way, Paul, something triggered in my mind the need to question my religion. And for me, it was a really small thing about a decade or so ago, about 15 years ago, I guess now. And that was a little word. It's called Asher. In second Shamuel, meaning he listens, 7:11, right around in that area. If you read your English Bible, it says, speaking to the Masayah. Masayah is his real title. It means the work of Yah. It says that when he sins, I will not spare the rod. Speaking of the Messiah. Well, I read that, and I read it in 20 different translations, and they all say, when he sins. But if he sins, he can't be the perfect Lamb of God. He's not dying and not enduring all of this for me. Now, come to find out, God didn't die. That, too, is a Christian myth. But I was perplexed. I said, you know, this whole thing is false if that's actually what it says. And I came to study the word Asher. Asher means it's a word that conveys two concepts. One is it ties things together by a relationship, and it speaks of the benefit of that connection. And so what the passage actually says, the statement from God, it says, when sin is beneficially associated with him, I will not spare the rod. And so he became the Passover lamb. He became yeast on our behalf during unyeasted bread to remove the fungus of yeast from us. God associated our sin with him, and so that he endured the penalty for those things, the consequence and the penalty of those things on behalf of us. But once I realized that the English translations had misrepresented this concept to create the exact opposite meaning of what was true, it opened the floodgates. I started to question everything. And then when I started to question everything, I said, you know, what I really need to do is just to find out, what did God really say? But sharing what I learned in a book called Yada Yah. You can find it at yadayah.com. It's free. And in that book, I decided I was going to use prophetic testimony to see if, in fact, God's existence could be proven, A, and B, whether God can be known through his prophetic testimony. And that book, 2,500 pages long, is called Yada Yah. And in it, what I found is, boy, God's the opposite of what I was told in religion. He bears no similarity whatsoever to the Christian God. But wow, he's terrific. I really like the real God. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We're still having a conversation with Paul from Ontario, because the questions that Paul has raised are probably the most important for our world to hear. The short answer to your question as to how I came to know Paul is that once I started to question, once my mind was actually open and receptive to being able to process the truth as opposed to reject it, I fell in love with the God that I came to know by listening to and reading the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. I fell in love with him. I thought that what he was offering us was magnificent. I admired his character. I am a resolutely rational individual, and so I loved the consistency, the dependability of what he presented. I loved the evidence that he provided to support his testimony. I just loved the way that it was presented, and I simply devoted myself to studying what he said, because the more I learned, the more I came to love him. And the more I realized that so many people were missing the most wonderful gift in the world, which is to come to know Yahweh and to have a relationship with him and his covenant. And so there's really nothing more to it than actually reading, sharing, coming to know what God himself said. Seems like a pretty reasonable approach, doesn't it?
Yes.
Now let me share something with you that that most people, and I'm going to show you the opposite view of Yahweh. Are you aware that Paul said that he was demon possessed?
I think there is 2 Corinthians. I think it says, eh?
Correct. Yeah, Christians are beguiled by this because they have sermons after sermon on wondering what the thorn in Paul's side might have been, and yet Paul answered the question. Let me read to you what he wrote. This ought to have been enough all by itself. This is in 2 Corinthians 12th chapter 7th statement. And of the extraordinary superiority of the exaggerated revelations. You know, Paul is speaking now of his own testimony. Second Corinthians is the fifth letter that Paul wrote. So, of the extraordinary superiority of the exaggerated revelations, therefore, in order not to become overly proud, there was given to me a sharp goad, a sclopus. It is that is a troubling thorn at the end of a pointed stick used to control dumb animals. It typically would feature a poisonous scorpion's stinger. So he said, there was given to me a sharp goad, a troubling thorn in the body, a messenger of Satan, in order to strike and restrain me, so that as a result, at the present time, there is the high probability that I might not be conceited, currently exalting myself beyond that which would be justified, so as not to be able to be insolent or audacious, lifting myself up. A messenger of Satan, you know, the messengers, that the Hebrew word is malach, the people that the individuals we errantly call angels is a transliteration of the Greek agelos. Agelos is a translation of the Hebrew malach. They are messengers, they're envoys, and some number of them sided with Hasatan when he wanted to be worshipped as God. And so Paul admits right there, I have been possessed by Satan. Now, you mentioned that Paul had a conversion experience. Let me share with you one of the statements he makes about his conversion experience, because it also mentions this this same goad. He says, and he this is his testimony to Luke. You'll find it in Acts 26:14. And every one of us, he's speaking of the, I think sometimes he says that he was alone, sometimes he says he was with two people, sometimes with three. And he has a different account each time. But he says, every one of us, having fallen down to the earth, I heard a voice saying to me in the Hebrew language, Shaul, Shaul, why are you actually pursuing me? Why are you following me? Why are you striving with such intense efforts to reach me? It's hard for you to resist against the goad, the sharp pointed stick used to prod dumb animals. So here is, he's on the road to Damascus. He's a murderer, self-admitted murderer. He is doing everything that you could possibly do to identify with the adversary, Satan. And Satan speaks to him. And Satan says, why are you pursuing me, Shaul? And then Satan cites one of the most famous lines from pagan idolatry. It's a line that is that Dionysus speaks. It's Dionysus' single most famous line. It's also put in the mouth of Bacchus, who is the Roman version of Dionysus. Dionysus, by the way, the Pauline Iusus is based upon Dionysus. The Christians, even today, when they have their image of the of Jesus, he's almost identical to Dionysus. Dionysus' most famous line is, "It's hard, it's difficult for you to resist against the goat." In other words, Dionysus can control people. They can't resist his control. And so Paul heard Satan cite one of his most famous lines. And it's the same goad, isn't it? The same goad that was used in that line is the same goad that he says is still in his side with Satan controlling him by possessing him. You think that just putting those two things together would be enough for anybody that is honestly reviewing this material to say, wow, why am I listening to this guy?
Well,
you know, and Paul begins his assault on the Torah in Galatians 3 with the 10th statement. He writes, "Because to the degree that out of tasks or activities of the Torah, they are and they exist under a curse. For it has been written that I, to become accursed, everyone who not remains, all that having been written in the Torah, of thee to do them." Now, I'm sure that did not come across as particularly literate. That just happens to be an exacting translation of what Paul wrote. Paul's letters are very, very poorly written. But what Paul said there is that if you're following the Torah, you're under a curse. It's what God, the word he used was katara, something that a supernatural power deploys when he wishes to invoke harm by promoting evil. So, according to Paul, the Torah is God's ploy to harm humankind. And then he quotes a passage out of context, twisting it, which says exactly the opposite. What God says is that the only way that you can be assured of salvation and not being diminished to nothingness is to embrace the terms and conditions outlined in my Torah. God says the opposite of what Paul just cited him saying. Then he says,
"These are very different. These are always, this has been these scriptures are always difficult to explain." Yeah, I mean, I've had so many conversations, and they are just confusing, and I always have a problem with them.
Yeah, that's what.
One scripture, we had like a one scripture, right? The whole Bible, and you know, controversy.
Yes, particularly from Paul. And by the way, Bible is the name of a pagan sun goddess. God never uses the term. Yahusha refers to scriptures, the Torah, prophets, and Psalms.
Yeah, I'm aware of that too. Yeah.
Yeah, and since Paul
is the term Bible. But.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that the Christians will divide it into a New and Old Testament, and yet.
Well, that reminds me about the second question. Jesus said, "This is the cup of the new covenant."
No,
so,
he didn't.
So Christians take it as a new covenant. He brought something new. So,
no, he didn't.
So how do we deal with that?
Because that's not what he said. There are first of all, his name is Yahusha. And he's recorded.
I agree with that.
Right. Yeah, his name is Yahusha. Yahusha means Yahweh saves. As a matter of fact, for anyone who doesn't agree with that, I mean, you do. So I'm just, because we have a large audience where I'm speaking to the audience. This whole conversation is not just for you know, because you and I are enjoying this conversation. It's listened to by lots of people, and so there's lots of people that can learn from it. If you don't know Yahweh's name, and you don't know Yahusha's name, you don't know them. It's impossible to know who Yahusha actually is if you don't know his name. Because his name identifies who he is, and it states why he is here. Yahusha, by his own declaration, is the diminished corporeal manifestation of Yahweh, set apart from Yahweh to serve us. And therefore, his job description, his mission statement, is Yahusha, which means Yahweh saves. So there are three accounts of the meal that Yosha was eating. Do you know what the name of the meal was that he was eating? Because Christians will call it the Last Supper. What was the
Last Supper? Right. That was the Passover. That was
correct.
The Passover.
Correct. Because he was going to be the Passover lamb the following day, which is in Hebrew is the same day, because days start at sundown and end at sundown. He could eat the Passover meal with his disciples and still be the Passover lamb on the same day by the scriptural accounting of a day, which begins at sundown and ends at sundown. So he was eating Passover, and he was speaking to his disciples about the two aspects, because Passover, unyeasted bread, and first fruits are all one event. Passover is responsible for us becoming immortal. It solves the penalty, the consequence of sin, which is death. But that's counterproductive unless you avail yourself of the next step, which is unyeasted bread, which makes us perfect. It's God removing the corruption of religion and politics from us with the fungus of yeast. And so Yahusha, once he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? His physical body, only his physical body, not God, died as the Passover lamb in keeping with the promise of Passover. His soul went into Sheol the following day, separated from God to pay the penalty of our sin, which is separation from God. And on the following day before sunrise, he became a Bokorim, which is the firstborn child unto Yahweh's family. And his new state was so different than his old state, because now the soul and spirit were reunited, that the only common theme amongst the eyewitnesses that day was no one recognized him. Not even his mother, not even his disciples. But now we're going to consider, there are three accounts of what was said during Pesach Passover. Two of them agree, and one of them differs. So we'll consider that when we return in a moment.
Health products.
Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. This is the last segment for today, and we're going to do our best to answer Paul, who's calling in from Ontario's last question about Christians citing Luke to say that their Last Supper. Yosha spoke of a renewed covenant. There are three testimonies of what was said in the celebration of Pesach, Matzah, and Bokurim, and the celebration of the Pesach meal. One of them is found in Matanyahu. Was Matthew one of Yosha's disciples, Paul?
Yes.
Okay. Is Matthew's therefore testimony that of an eyewitness?
Yes, he was
okay.
There.
Yeah, he was there. I don't know if you know this or not, but Mark was Shimon's, Paul's, translator when Paul spoke to audiences that were either Greek or Roman, Latin speaking. And so Mark is a record of what Shimon Kefesh, Peter, had to say. Was Shimon Kefesh an eyewitness?
Yes, he was there too.
All right, so he was there too. Both of them exclude the word renewed. The two eyewitness accounts both exclude the word renewed from that testimony. Lucas, was Lucas there?
No.
No. Who did Lucas identify with? Who was Lucas's contact with all of this? Was he not?
He was a doctor, as we know, and he was associated with Paul.
Correct. Correct. So so Lucas has it, and the other two eyewitnesses do not. Now, if you were in a court and you had hearsay testimony and you had two eyewitness testimony, if you're the judge, what are you going to do? Are you going to disallow the hearsay testimony, as all courts do, and are you going to embrace the two eyewitnesses?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that answers your question. But there's a better way, even beyond the fact that renewed is not in the context of the two eyewitnesses and is in the context of the hearsay account. Yosha spoke of the renewal and the reaffirmation of his covenant. You're probably aware that he did so in a book we misnamed Jeremiah. It's actually Yirmiyahu. It means Yahweh uplifts in the 31st chapter. That's where the concept of a renewed covenant is presented in Yirmiyahu 31. Are you aware that what Yahweh said there is that the covenant has not yet been renewed? It will be renewed. It has not yet been renewed. And when it is renewed, it's not renewed with a Gentile church. It's renewed with Yahudim and with Yisrael. And when it is renewed, future date, it's going to be renewed on Yom Kippurim in 2033 in our pagan calendars, year 6000 Yah. It's renewed upon his return. Do you know what God said about the only difference between the existing covenant and his reaffirmation of the covenant? There's only one thing that differs. You know what that is?
Yeah,
The one thing that differs is that with the reaffirmation and renewal of his covenant with Yahudim and with Yisrael, is that God is going to personally place a perfect copy of his Torah inside of us. So how can there be...
I think Ezekiel talks about too, right?
Right. He's going to literally write a copy of the Torah inside of us. So how can the world, could there be this concept of this new testament that completely annuls the Torah for God to return to completely incorporating the Torah in our lives when his covenant is finally renewed? Isn't that the most ridiculous thought that was even conceivable? Beyond that, there's a reason that God can't write his Torah inside of our hearts now, and the reason that none of us have his Torah written inside of us, have a complete copy of his Torah inside of us. The moment his Torah is actually inside of us, and we can't reject it, and we can't corrupt it, then there is no more free will. I mean, God established his Torah. He says, you know, your choice. Here is my covenant and my Torah. Torah, by the way, means teaching and guidance. It does not mean law. He said, here it is. You can choose to accept it. You can choose to reject it. You can choose to ignore it. You can choose to hate it. Your call. I gave you free will. But the moment he writes it inside of us, we no longer have that choice. In other words, there's the basis of participating in a relationship goes away because there is no choice. Well, he can write it inside of us at that when he returns, because when he returns, every decision will be made. You'll either choose to accept him, reject him, participate in the covenant, or reject the covenant. Paul, this has been one of my favorite discussions since I've begun this program. I hope that you call again in a future program. I hope you send me an email and we can communicate that way. You've been an absolute delight to talk to.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact.